Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Breaking Bread, a daily Pennsylvanian podcast about diversity, equity, and inclusion. My name is Liv Yoon, and I'm your host. Today, we are recording a new episode with Millen Chan. Our food for the day is boba. I got taro milk tea. What did you get?
I got brown sugar milk tea.
Okay, yes. So I met Millen through my roommate, Dom, who's actually, he came on as the guest for Breaking Bread's very first episode. And Millen is Dom's G-Big in his fraternity, so I've had the pleasure of getting to know him over the past year. And I think Millen has a lot of cool things to say, and I'm glad he's here today. So let's get right into it. Hello, Millen.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll start with a quick introduction. So if you can say your name, year, major, hometown, pronouns, and any part of your identity that you feel are relevant and or comfortable sharing.
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Millen Chand. I use he, him pronouns. I'm a senior at college 24. I'm a neuroscience major, Asian American studies minor, urban studies minor, and chemistry minor. I know, a mouthful.
Wait, wow. I did not even know that.
Yeah, and I'm originally from Newtown, Connecticut. So, and identity. So I am a South Asian American and queer identifying individual.
How has your identity as a queer Indian male influenced your time at Penn? Where have you found communities to express and celebrate your identity?
Coming to Penn, I think, after coming out at the end of high school and really starting to explore my identity, I immediately came to Penn in the fall during kind of the time when Penn wasn't allowing students on campus. So I lived off campus with a group of individuals who are my best friends today. And it was very interesting coming, living with straight roommates. I immediately had the need to, like, tell everybody, and especially them, like, I'm gay, like, I hope that's okay, kind of a thing. And they were so accepting. And for me to really navigate the fraternity rush experience was definitely very difficult at first. I found myself adhering to a lot of, like, common masculinity traits and ensuring myself that I was, like, ready to be in a fraternity. And I think being in a high school environment where I continually told myself that that was the truth and that was what I was going to be like made it a little bit easy. But I think as I came to Penn and I met more people when people came on campus and I took important classes like Asian American gender and sexuality, and I learned so much more about what my identity meant in the broader scope, I really understood that, like, okay, I don't need to fit this one mold and I don't need to be this person for anybody. So I think I really appreciated the people that I was rushing with were so supportive of me, and that people still were able to delineate my identity from my personality when I was rushing. But that being said, there was a little bit of a feeling of tokenization in some senses and some places that may have just wanted me as a poster child rather than who I was. So joining the fraternity I'm in today, I am so appreciative that the people in this, like, space were so accepting and actually wanted to notice me for who I was. And it's completely, like, one of the most diverse spaces I've been in, and I'm so grateful to be in that area. But I think throughout my Penn experience, beyond that, I've gone through so many more ups and downs where I've been able to find community in so many other places that I didn't expect. And I think branching outside of this very male-dominated space allowed me to kind of connect with other queer-identifying individuals who were either also South Asian or also people of color. And I think that changed my sphere even more. I was able to kind of lean into my femininity a lot more and wear crazy outfits and kind of really get into my fashion sense, which I really enjoyed and I think has allowed me to become the person I am today. And I'm really grateful that the people around me have supported me, both cis men, both cis women, both transgender, both gender nonconforming. And it's really amazing that there is such kind of, like, I would say, support from the people in my life. And I think I'd like to keep it that way to people in my life who will continue to support me.
Absolutely. That's great. How would you say you were able to, because you said when you first started at Penn, you were still trying to conform to stereotypical masculine traits. How were you eventually able to, like, I guess, what did that process look like of getting more comfortable with yourself?
Yeah, so I think that rush was definitely the reason why I think I had to fit into those stereotypes, because I was trying to impress people and trying to make sure that, like, oh, like, I can be in a fraternity, I can be a man, and I can do all the things that it means to kind of be a part of this organization. And I think for me, that was an entryway ticket. And it's unfortunate that I had to believe that that was the way. And I think it's unfortunate that that's the case, because now being on the other side of things, it's really sad that there is kind of that, like, need to be, like, you have to like certain masculine things to be a part mm-hmm. of this organization. And I think it's frustrating, because now being on the other side of it, I have to advocate for kind of the other side of personalities and interests, and being like, okay, we already have this metric of you need to be a man, a cis man, to be in this space. So how do I expand the diversity in whatever constraints I can mm-hmm. to allow other people to bend the kind of rules in that sense and be a little bit outside of the norm? And I know that is the absolute baseline of what I can do, and trust me, I've worked harder on that than I've ever worked on anything else. But I think that being said, like, the stereotype was only an entryway ticket. And I think now that I feel like I was able to make connections and I was able to kind of put my foot in the door in some senses, I realized that there was so many other places on campus where community can be forged without that kind of, like, barrier to entry and without, like, all of these difficulties that I didn't need to kind of put on myself. So again, I'm appreciative of the people that I met through this process, but I think more than anything, I'm more appreciative of all the places that I've gone because of it and all the people mm-hmm. I've met beyond that. I think that's what allowed me to really explore my sexuality even further, and more than that, see what the intersection of my kind of South Asian side would influence to, like, what does it mean to be a person of color who's queer mm-hmm. compared to being white and queer?
Yeah, absolutely. Have there been any, you mentioned that you found different communities and places where you've really felt comfortable. Like, are there any specific ones?
Yeah, so I think for me, being a part of, like, a lot of different organizations, like the Model UN team on campus, which was a very diverse group as well, and seeing people of different interests with, like, kind of that similar, like, personality type, I would say, mm-hmm. of being very public speaking and outspoken. And then there's also being in Carriage now as a senior society. That's an incredible space that I'm so grateful to be a part of. And I think I met a lot of people through the Asian American Studies program that kind of let me discover this intersection of queer and Asian American. But from that intellectual and academic side, I think transitioning that to the social scene is so important, because I met so many seniors last year that kind of, like, taught me, okay, you can go out and be proud in Philadelphia and do this and this and this and mm-hmm. join these different spaces. But I think senior societies, beyond those which have been so influential, I think, by, like, finding new families across campus as an upperclassman, which is hard to find, I think there's just smaller areas like Pier and Apali, which definitely allowed me to explore more of that kind of ethnic background as well, and seeing so many different people of so many different, like, identities on top of that.
Okay, yeah. How is, I guess, leading into this, how has your cultural heritage influenced your perception of your queer identity and vice versa?
Yeah, so this is something I definitely considered a lot in my Asian American gender and sexuality class, because I think it finally gave me a chance to, like, approach what it meant that my background and everything that happened in my life, from living in a white town to having parents who were born in India, it really, like, forced me to confront, like, okay, these are all things that happened within your life that led you to the way you are today. Mm-hmm. And so I will say, first off, I'm really appreciative of my parents for being as accepting as they are. They kind of welcomed me with open arms when I told them, and I remember coming out to everybody on one day. I was like, I'm going to get this all done, like, wipe the slate and start college anew, which was amazing. But yeah. I think it's also, like, a learning process. We talk a lot in this class about how the coming out experience for many people of color is not, like, an all or nothing thing. For many white queer individuals, there is this feeling of you either get fully accepted immediately or you're fully ostracized and you're out the house. And I think for queer people of color, there is a varying kind of scape. Like, many people experience the same thing, especially within American culture, but then I think when you have immigrant families where there is less queer culture around them, and coming to America, it seems foreign. Mm-hmm. And I think that's completely rooted and based in colonial context and the way that we kind of look at queer history. But it's shocking because if you think about it, like, there were hijras in India back in the day before the British colonialized the entire nation, and this third gender was celebrated in India, and it still is to an extent. But I think seeing this like liberation of queer people in India to then being locked up, I think that changes the generations. And so my parents live in a generation where being gay wasn't okay even in India. So, and the fact that it was just decriminalized only a little bit ago makes it even more relevant. So I think for my parents, the fact that they were able to come to America and be as liberal as they are and really accept that this is something that maybe because of American culture, but is also because it's real and it's true and there are people that like us that exist, makes me so happy that they were like there for me. But it's still definitely a growing process. Like me getting my nails done is something that is a progressive thing to kind of like get used to, or having rings or having pearl necklaces, whatever it may be. I think the ways in which I express my femininity have been an uphill battle in many spaces I've been in. But I think for me, it's always been about teaching people that, okay, this is, I'm still me. Just because I express myself in this way doesn't mean that I am a different person or that you have to judge me for that. It's just my own expression. And I think that's something that I've like taken with grace, and I feel like I've had to really approach with a lot of humility.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I like what you said about like the parents and the generations. I think I can definitely relate to that. I think my parents definitely, it's, I think kind of similar to what you were saying. It's more of this, it's a process. It's not black or white. It's not, oh, you're kicked out of the house or you're open, welcome with open arms. It's kind of almost exposure therapy to them.
Yeah, literally.
and it takes time. I think a reason why a lot of POC parents are hesitant about sexuality is because of just the immigrant experience. Mm-hmm. And growing up, my parents were taught, you just need to assimilate. You just need to blend in and put your head down and work hard. Mm-hmm. And so coming out and, I guess, making yourself heard and expressing yourself is not doing that.
Mm-hmm. It's, like, antithetical to, like, exactly that, like, why would you come out and if and be so expressive when your whole kind of point in life is to just stay down, when it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive?
Yeah. And I will say it's a privilege to be able to do that, mm-hmm. because I would probably think the same way if that's what I was taught my whole life, that mm-hmm. I have to assimilate and I don't even have the option to do something like mm-hmm. that. So.
And so many people, I think, like, again, it's a varying experience. I don't want to say that all Asian Americans are monolith and experience the same, mm-hmm. but it is definitely common, I think, that there is like a more of a working process. But I have friends who have not come out to their parents at all and will never. And I have friends who think their parents know in some way but won't actually say it out loud. But there's like a common understanding. And then I have friends who, like me, are working through it. And it's a whole spectrum, I think, of understanding. But in that root cause of like Asian Americans for queer liberation and like kind of the history that happened in California is so rich and so important to the way that I think immigrants, especially queer immigrants, kind of have made their stance in this country and have really combined those two experiences to show that we are still here. And just because we're not from here doesn't mean we don't have the same kind of ability to express ourselves.
Have you found that there's a very good community of queer people of color at Penn?
I think there definitely is. I remember, I think it was my sophomore, my junior year, I was able to join QPOC, which is Queer People of Color at Penn. Mm-hmm. Amazing group of individuals. And it just felt like an amazing space to kind of like see friends that I knew in different ways and different places to kind of come together and be like, oh, wow, like we're all here. We all exist in one room, and being at the LGBT Center and being like, wow, you're here. Oh my God, you're here. Like, you're here. And it was like amazing that that space was there. And that was like very much precursor to Carriage, which I really appreciated. Mm-hmm. I think also one thing that I found very important was like forging more communities where queer people can be there. So me and a friend started Giggle, which is Gays in Greek Life. And that was an amazing group to start. We definitely had a lot more cis women than cis men. But that being said, it was really nice to see like all these people coming together for a BYO or whatnot. And it showed that there was a community there of a space that may not necessarily be as accepting to queer people, but we still exist and we still matter. And then I would say also one of my favorite kind of like just groupings of people was just a group of South Asian American queer people. I met a few people from here and there, and right when Alok Menon, this incredible poet, comedian, and author, came to Penn, who was the inaugural LGBTQ scholar in residence at Penn's LGBT Center, they came for a show actually at the Kimmel Center. And I remember getting all my South Asian queer people together. I made a group chat. It was called the Sax. And it was perfect because I had just written a paper about Sax. And I was like, let's go. So I got them all together and I was like, let's go see this show. And it was a beautiful experience for us to just go and see someone we truly identified with and just had such beautiful poetry and such an amazing stance in the world. And I remember looking up to them so much throughout my life. Or at least I would say my queer life and my college life, because that was when I heard about them. And they truly, I think, have gotten me out of so many different struggles. And reading their poetry was so inspiring to me throughout college. So it was a beautiful moment to have these four queer, brown, beautiful human beings with me in the aisle. And then when they came to Penn, it was even better, because then I got to meet them in person at a dinner and talk to them about their experience. And they literally just answered my prayers and made me feel so seen. And then I went to a class and talked about their scholarship. And then I went to another comedic show. And it just felt so amazing and full circle as a junior to finally have this experience with my fellow Sacs. And it was just truly so inspiring.
So you're a senior now.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
So you're going to graduate soon. And, well, first, not to ask this question again that you've probably been asked a million times, what are your post-grad plans?
Well, speaking of queerness, I am actually working at an HIV clinic in New York next year. And I'm very excited, because one thing that Alok always said was, New York is the place of queer people, and that is where you truly get to discover yourself. So I'm excited to go beyond Penn. I'm definitely sad to be leaving so many amazing people, and I know those connections will last, but I'm excited that I get to do work for the queer community. It is a clinic for queer people to come in and get their PrEP HIV testing needs, and I'm really excited because the work and the person I get to work for are just truly incredible, and really just like something that I am passionate about. And I know as a pre-med, like, you can do so many different things during your gap year, but this is something that I know, like, I will truly be fulfilled by doing. And then, yeah, I think just being in New York will also just be in its own experience to experience queer culture and the origins of so much queer activism, and being able to kind of go out and be queer and feel hopefully safe. So
that's so exciting. I think I kind of feel like I can relate to that. I grew up in a very white, hetero, conservative area, mm-hmm. Boston. And then Penn is actually the most diverse institution I've ever been at. Mm-hmm. And I think, is that the same for you, probably?
Yeah, definitely. I would say my town is a little bit more liberal, but that being said, it's pretty 50-50 in some ways. And I think, yeah, when you're around a lot of white heteros, you definitely think like one sometimes. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And then I feel like maybe your next step is, I guess, being in a really diverse place. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm wondering what you're looking forward to most about that.
Honestly, just like being spontaneous, trying new things. Like, one thing I never even expected was everything that's come out of Penn, and mm-hmm. being able to go celebrate queer culture downtown, and being able to, like, again, see Alok and take amazing classes and do incredible research projects about what the South Asian queer experience means to me. And I think that was something that changed my, like, perspective, was doing something in an academic setting and then translating it to, like, the social world and what does it look like on the ground. And that's why I love ethnography research. Like, it's just so beautiful and so amazing. It's so real. But that being said, like, I think it's making me look forward to, like, studying and being, like, within New York. I think there's just so much to offer, and, like, there's this app I just got. It's called Everything and Everywhere is Queer. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited because I've been looking at it in Philly. And there's a few places. And don't get me wrong, Philly is a pretty queer city. We love it.
Yeah.
But New York is even more queer. And I was looking at it. And there's just countless just spots of just like, this is a queer POC-owned tattoo shop. You can go and get a tattoo there. This is a queer POC bakery. And it's just so amazing.
Wait,
that, like,
what is this called?
It's called, I think it's Everywhere is Queer or Everything is Everywhere. Everywhere is queer. And that is true because everywhere is truly queer, even Texas. Ain't no hold'em. Like, but I mean it. And I'm like, I'm really, really beyond like emotional about it because it is something that I'm like, this is like breaking the third wall. Like, yeah. I am ready to just be in a place where like, not only do I feel like I'll be celebrated, but I think I'm going to find people that will make me even more invigorated to just like, be. So,
I think you're going to meet some really cool people.
I'm excited. Hopefully I do.
Okay. And then I guess to wrap it up, looking back, is there anything you wish you had known about navigating your identity in college that you know now? So if you could go back and give recently high school graduated Millen any advice, what would it be?
Oh my God. What would I give my little self advice about? I would say really just break the barriers, break the labels, break the stereotypes. I know that's kind of basic, but I think it's so often that we find ourselves like trapped into these little bubbles and we're trying to impress people in certain ways and trying to be someone that we're not, especially at Penn when you're really locked into social spheres and just in general, like so many exclusive settings of clubs, this club, that. I think sometimes you lose yourself in trying to be another person. And while I think I was definitely very authentic to myself, I think little me would appreciate to be like, hey, what if you just like did more, be more flamboyant, be more like gay, just do it. Like who cares? Like, and I think that's something that I was working towards, and it definitely wasn't at the point where I could have been all of that. Mm-hmm. But I think the stereotypes obviously will always hold you back. So screw them. It doesn't matter. It's college. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy who you are. And my biggest advice, just be.
I love that. I will ask though, is it ever exhausting constantly having to be the one to break the barriers? Because I think that's something I personally run into just whenever I'm trying to make change, whenever I'm trying to make things better for, you know, certain marginalized people. I feel like I get fatigued, like I get burned out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of myself as a barrier breaker necessarily, but what I do think is like any small change you can make in your life will have a profound impact for somebody else down the line. And I think if you can do that for yourself, it's even better if you can do that for somebody else. And I think that's what like has led me to now where I am, where I hold a lot of privilege where I am. I think I've definitely been able to break down some barriers for myself, but I think with that privilege comes an important responsibility to be like, okay, let me think beyond, let me think more creatively, let me break barriers for a whole community, a whole group of other people that definitely don't have the voice to speak up or definitely don't have the means to or the privilege or the value or the space. And I think one thing that I learned from one of my classes, which is the most Marxist and amazing class I've ever taken, but it's called The City. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest takeaways was we don't think big enough. We think within the confines of what society looks like, what society means, what society tells us to be. And I think if we switch our mindset to be like, okay, well, capitalism's the only way that things are gonna go about. No, like you just haven't tried anything else. Mm-hmm. So if we think about identity the same way, if we think about social stereotypes the same way, if we think about breaking barriers the same way,
yeah.
If we all just think a little bit more creatively, maybe there is a little bit space for all of us.
That's amazing. I'm going to quote that. Okay. Do you have any last comments?
I will just say be compassionate. Love everybody. I think that's another thing I just love is just love. Like, I think there's so much hatred in this world, and I just want everyone to, like, take a piece of every podcaster like myself's advice and just like go around the world spreading compassion. And I think that's the only way that we can all truly be
amazing. thank you guys for listening, and thank you, Millen, for giving us some great insight and coming on today.
Of course.
Stay tuned for the next episode.